Hey, Misfits, welcome back to the Misfits and Mysteries Podcast. We're your weekly podcast for all things weird and wacky, from Bigfoot to aliens and psychology and history and everything in between. We're your hosts, Emmy.
And Steve. All right, guys, so welcome back. This week, we're joined by a very special guest host, Kelly, from the Canadian Spirit Podcast.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, Emmy was unfortunately abducted by aliens and is yet to be returned to me, so Kelly's going to be filling in this week.
Now, was it aliens or was it raccoons? I think they're one and the same, actually.
That's a good question. I couldn't tell you to be certain. I presume aliens.
Well, when you think about it, raccoons, they're 3 feet tall, gray in color, big black eyes, weird hands. I think it's case closed on that one.
Perhaps it is. Perhaps not. Maybe little green men, maybe not little green men. All I know for certain is that I was shitposting on Reddit and people didn't ask you an argument to make somebody a good point about aliens. Someone said something about like, would aliens look like humans? And I was like, I'm going to do a shit post here and just get in trouble with my burner account. That's what I do. I have a burner on Reddit, which you talked about last week. Someone was really mean to me on r/Austin, and I created a burner just to dislike every single post they had just to fuck with their karma. Basically, I made the point that I don't think aliens would look like, I mean, this is not all we're talking about today, guys, but just on a tangent, I don't think aliens would look like humans because we have different selective pressures on different planets in theory. So why the hell would they look anything like us unless they had an identical selective pressures from the beginning of time?
There is one theory out there. It's called divergent evolution. The basis of it is that there's certain traits that can evolve in certain species that are completely unrelated to each other. Take, for example, echolocation. It's present in both bats and whales. And yet they have very different evolutionary patterns, but they still evolve to have that thing. So it is possible, but I agree with you. It's pretty unlikely.
Yeah. The other thing, too, with convergent evolution, just everything we know about it is based on all the selective pressures of Earth. Let's say Venus has life on it, just because that's the first planet I thought of for some reason. Venus will have convergent evolution, but all the selective pressures are going to be so different than Earth that they probably won't evolve to look like us, but there'll be a bunch of things that have evolved similar traits that exist on Venus. Yeah, I don't know. It's possible. I think someone had a really good comment under it, too. I'm not looking at Reddit right now, but someone said something like, yeah, the reason that you don't see non-humanoid aliens in popular media is because they don't want to make those costumes for people.
That is very true. Unless, of course, you go the whole John Carpenter route and go with The Thing. Fantastic film, by the way.
I was thinking, like, Jabba the Hutt, but you don't see very many Jabba the Hutt-like creatures.
Yeah. Unless you go to Walmart, that is.
Is it the same there in Canada like it is here?
Oh my God, dude. Just rubbing my forehead here. The people who shop at Walmart, I don't know if their families, if their parents were related, you know, before they were married or what is going on with some of the people shopping there, but dear God, it is just as bad here in Canada as it is in the United States. I guarantee you.
Canada's just the US light. It's surprising we haven't merged yet. I mean, we tried in 1812, but it didn't really work out.
Yeah, there was a bit of a war that happened, and
I have an important question. Do you guys still play the War of 1812 victory commercials before movies in Canada?
No, we don't.
Because when The Dark Knight Returns, that's the one with Bane, right? When that came out, I was visiting my buddy in Canada. I went to see it, and they had an advertisement for the Canadian military, whatever the equivalent of the Marines are.
Yeah, the armed forces.
Yeah, the armed forces. And literally one of the selling points is that they won the War of 1812.
Yeah, technically it was a win, but also technically it was also a loss because once they burned everything from the St. Lawrence to the Mississippi, your guys got our guys completely drunk on off their ass, and then they made them sign an accord, which basically said they lost the war. So a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
That's too funny. So why don't you just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your podcast, everything like that?
Okay, thanks, Steve. My name's Kelly. I'm the Chief Technical Officer of the Supernatural Paranormal Investigations and Research Institute. Forgot the name of my own institution there. Been doing paranormal investigations and research for the last 15 years or so up here in Alberta, Canada. And a couple of years ago, Darcy, that's the founder of Spirit, and myself, we decided to start up our own podcast because we wanted to keep our investigative skills fresh and sharp. So we started up the Canadian Spirit Podcast, where we look into all the evidence and whatnot for Canadian paranormal happenings. And we try to figure out what may be behind some of what has happened in our history.
That's pretty cool. So I do have to ask you this, then, because you are a paranormal investigator. Have you ever seen a ghost?
As far as full body apparitions go, I haven't. I've seen some little bits of evidence here and there. I've caught a lot of EVPs and whatnot, but it doesn't stand to be concrete evidence that there is spirits out there. So I'm still somewhat on the fence as far as, say, like ghosts being a form of afterlife or something like that. I have my own theories on that, but that'll take a whole other podcast to get into.
I mean, just a quick story. I've told this on the podcast like twice already. So sorry, guys, if I feel like a broken record, but it's been since February since I told this story. So I feel like I can say it again and people have forgotten. But I have actually
recycling content.
Exactly. I actually have seen a ghost. I don't really believe in ghosts. So I'm weird. I don't believe in ghosts, but I would never want to be in a haunted house, you know? Oh, just before we get into the story, guys, this is not just going to be random things. We do have a theme soon. We're just chatting right now and just getting stuff out there. So I'll tell you the quick story. I have a second one that I can tell you after because I don't want to keep repeating it. People might get mad at me. But basically, not that you can see because it's pitch black out because it's like 10 p.m. here. There's a bay right outside my parents' house where I'm currently staying. And people like to fish off this little pier. There's nothing to catch there. I don't know what the hell these people are doing. I have fished off a kayak there, where I have better mobility and there's not jack shit over there. These people are wasting their time, whatever. So there's always people fishing there. And there's always this dude out there early in the morning when it's like foggy around 5 a.m. fishing, right? So I never really thought anything of it. My dad's seen him. I see him like every day. I just assumed it's a dude who's like fishing. An important detail about the bay is in World War II during the, what is it, like AAA or whatever, all the projects that FDR created, they built this island. And as a result, the tides are kind of fucked. And at low tide, there's just no water in the bay. So where this guy would be fishing, there's no water, right? He'd be casting into the mud. So unless he's trying to catch some of those filthy predatory worms that make him want to vomit. Have you ever seen a bloodworm? Just random aside.
Yeah, I have. So they're terrifying little things. They're almost like aliens in and of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, like things like that just in the mud and if I fell in that mud, I think I would just end my life. But again, that aside. So basically, my dad always saw him in the morning. I used to not get up early enough to see him. My dad's like, oh, there's a guy fishing out there all the time. So I was around this construction site in January of 2020. So like 2 months before COVID was a thing here. And so January, it's snowing and it's cold here. So one day there was this dude just fishing in the fog. Or so the other thing is, we see this guy and he vanished when the fog was gone, right? But it's like, okay, this guy's just fishing before work, nothing crazy. And then I see the dude, he's just out there like one morning fishing, no water in the bay. It's like 4:30 a.m. I had to get up to be at the construction site by 6. So I'm up 4:30, there's a guy fishing. I don't think anything of it. He's gone by the time the fog's gone. I don't know, I'm like 15, 20 minutes down 95 and all of a sudden everything clicks. I'm like, huh, guy vanishes every time the fog goes away. He's only there first thing in the morning, fishing in the mud. That was a fucking ghost.
Probably, unless it's somebody who is suffering from extreme dementia and doesn't know what the hell is going on. But I think that it's very possible that you could be seeing like a residual apparition. So
yeah, and per sources, apparently, you know who Lou Gehrig is? I don't know if you follow baseball at all. He was before our time.
Former baseball player, has a disease named after him.
Yeah, very, very, very famous baseball player. So Lou Gehrig had a summer home, which is hysterical now because like where we live, it's suburbia. You don't really want to have a summer home or nothing to do. But he had like a quote unquote summer home in the community that's like right across the bay from us. And apparently he used to fish here and he died in this area. And allegedly it's his ghost. Look, let's put it this way. I don't want to be up at 4:30 a.m. to begin with. So no way in hell I'm getting up early enough to investigate. And second of all, if it is a ghost, I'm not going to go see a ghost up close and personal. That might mess me up mentally.
Well, shit, if I ever make it down to New York, I might have to go and check that place out myself.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I do.
Be prepared. You have to be up at like 4:30.
I'm always up early.
No, sort of give an overview of what we're doing this episode. So I had this idea. Fortunately, Emmy was abducted by aliens before we could execute it. But luckily, I have a real life Canadian to help out. So we're going to be looking into lumberjack folklore.
Is that I like it?
Awesome. And we have, I don't know if you're a lumberjack yourself, but I know that Canada has some of the most wooded area, I think, in the world, unexplored, and a lot of lumberjacks.
Yeah, it's been part of Canadian culture for a very long time. Yeah, the forestry industry has been in the past and continues to be some of the most profitable things in Canada right now. So yeah, it does have a lot of rich folklore, especially when it comes to things like the supernatural and the paranormal. Some of it, I wonder just how much of it is, you know, veterans out in the woods trying to scare the new guy, and how much of that is urban legend, and how much of it could potentially be real.
I mean, just looking through it, I didn't write down a ton of them because I feel like this is a rich pool of folklore. I don't want to blow it all at once, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But when I was looking through it, it seemed like a lot of them were based on real animals and were clearly used as explanations for why X, Y, or Z happened, which we can get into. For example, why forest fires happen, why you hear trees crashing in the middle of the night, stuff like that, which like there's those. And then there's some things where it's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, that's kind of like the story that I have prepared for you this evening.
So let's start off with your story.
All right. So this story is not specifically about lumberjacks, but it does star a group of lumberjacks. It kind of passes, right?
Yeah, sure thing.
There's a lot of versions of this story, but I couldn't really find one that spoke to me. So I kind of wrote my own version of the legend. All the original details are still included, but I took a few artistic licenses with it.
Mix and matched. Hey, our philosophy is it doesn't have to be true because most of the stuff isn't. As long as you have a source, that's good enough for us.
Sounds good. So yeah, our story takes place in the wilderness of Quebec around the year 1800. The date was December 31st, New Year's Eve. Life as a lumberjack was hard in those days, as these dudes had to live for months and months at a time out in the woods with no way to contact the outside world. Now, with it being New Year's Eve, they were pretty bummed out because their sweethearts all lived in Quebec City, which was a full 3-day journey on foot from where they were. Well, one of the lumberjacks named Baptiste confided in his friends that he might just have a way for them to get to Quebec City in time for the festivities. Of course, these guys were skeptical. How could you make it to the city when it was such a long journey? Well, magic, obviously. But not the David Blaine or David Copperfield type. The dark arcane type. Baptiste said that he knew of an incantation that would summon none other than Satan himself to carry them upon the winds to their sweethearts in the city. Well, the boys talked amongst themselves for a bit before reluctantly agreeing to the arrangement. Baptiste began to recite the incantation, and in a burst of hellfire, a dark-eyed creature in a beaver pelt vest appeared before them. That's actually part of the legend. I didn't make that one part up. He was standing next to a strange-looking canoe. All of the lumberjacks were now terrified. They didn't actually expect this to work, but the devil himself showed up. Satan waved a dismissive hand in the air, and he tells the boys, "You don't have to be afraid of me, gentlemen. I'm happy to be of service. But there are a few rules before taking a ride in Le Chasse-Galerie." The devil shot them, well, a devilish smile, and continued. "First of all, while we fly across the night sky, you will steer Le Chasse-Galerie." That's the name of the canoe, in case I didn't make that clear. "You must not pass over any churches, because, you know, I'm the devil at all. Secondly, you must not tell anyone of how you arrived at your destination. And finally, you must not partake in any alcohol. I may be the devil, but I detest drinking and operating a vehicle. Do you accept these terms?" Baptiste assures his comrades that he's done this a number of times, and he always returned unharmed. So the lumberjacks agreed, and they all climbed into the canoe. It lifted off into the sky, and they began paddling like crazy, and in a matter of minutes, they arrived at a New Year's party where their sweethearts had gathered. The girls were astounded and delighted to see their lovers. Of course, they asked how they got there, but the lumberjacks refused to say with sly smiles. They danced and made merry the whole night through before noticing that Baptiste was nowhere to be found. After kissing their ladies goodnight, they returned to Le Chasse-Galerie and found Baptiste, passed out drunk. The devil was present, shaking his head. Terrified, the men shook in their boots, but the devil told them that it was time to go home. They piled into the canoe and began paddling. Not quite sure why the devil had just agreed to take them home despite one of them blatantly breaking the rules, but Baptiste had done this before, so maybe he knew what he was doing? So a few minutes later, they were closing in on the camp when Satan spoke up. "You know, I give you guys 3 simple rules, 3 super easy to follow rules, and you can't even follow them. Well, for every rule broken, there is a consequence." The devil began rocking the canoe, laughing maniacally. The canoe overturned in the air, and the lumberjacks tumbled out, falling into the depths of the deep, dark forest. Some say they died there. Others say they fell straight down into the pits of hell. Either way, they were never seen again. What I like about this story, though, is it's one of those weird hybrids between folklore and fable. It's kind of like a folktale, depending on how you look at it. It has multiple morals to the story, like, you know, don't take rides from strangers, don't make deals with the devil, don't indulge in alcohol, no drinking and boating, flying. I don't know how to classify that last one. But it kind of stands to reason why it's continued to be a popular Canadian legend, because like all good fables, it has a lot of morals and values that we still espouse to this day.
I like that story. I like how the devil invented Uber before Uber existed.
that's a good point.
I enjoyed that. I thought it was really good. I mean, that Baptiste guy kind of fucked over his friends, though, gotta say.
In a couple of different legends, it's seen that maybe Baptiste is one of Satan's minions and he's actively trying to get them into the canoe and trying to actively, essentially, harvest their souls, right? Because here's a little bit of trivia for you. The term chasse-galerie means galleries hunt, which a lot of people think may be referring to the wild hunt, which is a European legend, right? Basically, in those legends, it's a ghostly nobleman and his cronies that fly across the night sky in search of this enchanted white stag that they killed that originally led to that punishment. So it's seen as kind of an offshoot of that. It's just the devil is out hunting for souls instead in a flying canoe because Canada.
I like that a lot. So I didn't really go the story route. I got two creatures from their folklore, which you're more of an expert on this than I am. But does it bother you when there's something that's objectively from folklore or is like a folktale and then the internet calls it a cryptid? I understand that a cryptid is a hidden animal, right? Or a hidden creature that we haven't found yet. But some of these things objectively only exist to tell a story or like have a moral blame or explanation for something. And it bothers me a lot when they call them cryptids.
Yeah, I agree with you there. There are certain types of animals out there where they appear in mythology, but there's a kernel of truth to them, right? Mm-hmm. Like a couple of months ago, you and I were talking over Twitter about the jackalope that you saw, right? There's a lot of different legends and whatnot about the jackalope, but when you look at essentially what these things could actually be, they're basically rabbits with warts on them, to be perfectly honest. So like there is a bit of kernel of truth there. So
another example of one that really got me going is, geez, sometime in 2020, I talked about Inuit folklore because I thought it was interesting. I stumbled upon some of it. And there are these people called like the Tunit, and they're all over these cryptozoology websites. But the Tunit actually exists. They had a different name from the Inuit folklore. They are a real population of human beings that the internet has decided are part of cryptozoology. That one rubs me the wrong way because it's like, no, these are humans that you are saying are fantastical creatures. That's kind of fucked up. You're grouping them with fake things. These are real humans who existed.
Yeah, that took place in, I believe it's Northwest Territories or Yukon, somewhere around those.
Wherever the Inuits live. I forget exactly where. It's been a while since we did that.
When we were doing research for the first episode of our podcast on the Wahila, we were looking into Inuit folklore. We did come across that, but it wasn't really relevant, so we just kind of scrapped it.
What I thought was so fascinating about it was just that they actually did exist. It gives validity to a lot of these Native American folktales. And before we get to my thing, I know that you're going Bigfoot hunting tomorrow. So
yeah, I am so.
To transition to that, what I think is so fascinating about like the Tunit is, sure, they weren't actually called the Tunit, and there are a different population of humans that were there before that happened to be bigger and stronger hypothetically than the Inuits. That's one of the things where something that we thought was a myth actually existed. And that sort of plays into Bigfoot because there's all this Bigfoot folklore from Native Americans. And we're going to go Bigfoot hunting with our good friend and former MLB player, Michael McHenry, sometime soon. We're playing that out with him still. I don't really believe Bigfoot still exists, but I believe that there was a Bigfoot at some point in the U.S. And the only reason I don't believe it really exists still is that I just don't see what the food source could be for an ape that lives in the Canadian wilderness, most likely, where it's frozen most of the time. Most great apes subsist off fruit. Like, there isn't fruit in their population where they supposedly live.
Yeah, not only that, but genetic diversity also comes into play a role there, because in order to have a continuing species for as long as these things have supposedly existed, you have to have at least a population of 1,500 of them. And in that case, where the hell are they?
Yeah. So I don't think they're still like, I don't want anyone to get mad. I mean, I do believe in Sasquatch, but I believe that they're extinct.
I'm personally still on the fence because there are still certain, well, I think you actually had him on your podcast. He's
Jeff Meldrum.
Yeah, he's an expert in, he actually.
I mean, I've talked about this. I don't know if it was privately or on there. We're both kind of on the fence. He definitely made me believe more than I don't believe, right? But still, I just find it so difficult to believe that there could be a large enough population for the, I mean, they could exist maybe. Maybe they're just so genetically poor at this point, they're dying, they're killing themselves off.
Yeah, it could be. I guess the point that I'm trying to get at is I'm very on the fence as to whether Sasquatch is a real thing or not at this point. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of evidence for it. There's also a lot of evidence against it.
Exactly. So,
nevertheless, though, I'm still going out and hunting one tomorrow. I've got a guide with me to go into the area. It's a densely forested area, but supposedly there was a sighting about a 45-minute drive from where I live about a week ago. So I'm not holding my breath on capturing any kind of physical evidence, but still going to go out there and take a look around.
Make sure your HD camera is charged.
Oh, yeah. It's actually sitting right next to me charging as we speak.
Good, because I'm not going to settle for another, like, Nokia, like 2000 Nokia flip phone photo of freaking Bigfoot.
Well, you know, Bigfoot uses infrasound to knock out focusing equipment on cameras, don't you know? Because he's also an interdimensional alien. Come on.
Okay, this is another tangent too before we end it. Like, what do you think of like the whole skunk ape thing?
I mean, that's a Florida thing, right?
Yeah. So here's the thing is like the skunk ape, people have like equated it to Bigfoot. The actual most likely explanation is that there are a lot of chimpanzees that were retired from like show business into the Everglades, but they don't really have like the proper food source for them to actually have survived. If the skunk ape exists, it's like a remnant population of these gorillas, but here's like the chimpanzees. But here's the thing. The reason I don't think that's the case is, first of all, these are retired chimpanzees, so they don't know how to be chimpanzees. So they wouldn't survive in the wilderness. And second of all, chimpanzees every single night build a brand new leaf nest in the trees and they move locations. So if there was this remnant, there was a population of chimpanzees, we would literally know about it, because that means every year that there'd be a minimum, if even there's just one, there'd be a minimum of 365 nests in different trees in the Everglades.
Also, too, going back to the retired part, that means they're too old to perform. At that point, they'd also be too old to reproduce.
Exactly. So I don't think the skunk ape's real. I also think that Florida is full of, or not think, Florida is full of crazy people who do drugs.
I was just going to say, maybe skunk ape is just your typical Floridian.
Could be. Very hairy Floridian.
Just a guy who goes to Walmart every now and then.
So anyway, to get into some folklore, I've got two for you today. Okay. I don't know how familiar you are with American lumberjack folklore, because I wasn't until today.
Well, I know a little bit about Paul Bunyan, and that's about it.
Yeah, so actually, just quick aside that's relevant to that. I didn't know that Paul Bunyan didn't exist until we had Michael McHenry on, and we're just talking about Tennessee folklore stuff or urban legends, and then he told me that Paul Bunyan is an urban legend. Like, are you serious? I thought it was a real dude.
You thought that a 10-foot tall man with a blue ox was real?
Well, I thought they were exaggerating. I don't know. Anyway, so the first one I started is, have you ever heard of the Gumbaroo?
It sounds familiar, but maybe I'm mistaking it for something else.
So the Gumbaroo, the scientific name is Megalogaster repercussus. Not that that's going to help anyone, because I don't think anyone knows the name for something that, in my personal opinion, was probably invented to explain forest fires. So okay. The Gumbaroo is a hairless, bear-like creature with a smooth body, no wrinkles or anything. And it has very defined hairy eyebrows and a beard. It also has a grimace on its face at all times. And this creature was first discovered in Oregon in the 1900s by lumberjacks who initially tried to kill it, but the bullets bounced off its thick leathery skin. The thing about the Gumbaroo is it's responsible for all the forest fires in Oregon, because when this beast gets hot, it swells up and explodes, causing massive fires.
Okay, then. That's a little bit dramatic, isn't it?
Yeah. So a few more facts about the Gumbaroo is it's a nocturnal creature, and it lives in old hollowed out oak trees and only comes out after it's finished hibernating. So it also has an insatiable appetite. And it's said to devour anything it comes across, including entire living horses.
This thing sounds like a fucking Pokemon.
I know, seriously. This one, I think, is just not even a real thing. It clearly was meant to scare people. And it's like, oh, this is why random forest fires happen. Also, it was probably a bear with mange, if they're describing a hairless bear. Yeah.
I was just going to say that, because have you ever seen mange?
Yeah, I have, actually. When I was Googling the Gumbaroo, I saw quite a few unfortunate pictures of bears with mange.
Those things are scary looking without hair.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense that the mythology of it, the bullets bouncing off, because I'm not a hunter, but I know it takes a lot of bullets to take down a bear.
Yeah, it really does. And not only that, but with cryptid tales and stuff like that, it's actually really common to hear that. The Jersey Devil, for example, they say that they shot it even with a cannon and all the bullets bounced off that. And going back again to the Wahila, they say when you shoot at that, bullets bounce off it. Then there's the Kelly Hopkinsville goblins.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems to reflect bullets.
I mean, another one is, this is more of an urban legend, not any cryptid thing, but do you know about the New Orleans Devil Man?
No, I do not.
It was just like a dude who skipped out on his bar tab and people thought he was a devil.
Oh, yeah. But... you guys were talking about that on your podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. But he, bullets bounced off him too.
They got to stop using rubber bullets. That's the thing.
It's a trope. Everything they described is a bear with mange that they also use to explain why there are forest fires, because forest fires don't make much sense if you don't understand how natural systems work. So
they don't know how nature works, so it must be a supernatural creature.
All right, so the second one I have for you is Hugug. No, it's not Hugug. So
again, sounds like a Pokemon.
Again, it does. So move over, Canadian mooses. Welcome to America. This bad boy is said to stand 13 feet tall, weigh 6,000 pounds. It's a moose-like creature that inhabits the Lumberwoods territory of Minnesota. The creature has corrugated ears, an upper lip that's so long the beast must take care to avoid tripping over it. That's a direct quote from someone who allegedly saw it in the 1900s. And the Hugag is a friendly creature. It's very friendly towards humans and loves to travel, but it lacks knees, so it has to goose step all over the place.
That makes for one hell of a mental image. It's like a giant moose Nazi marching through the woods.
Exactly what I was thinking. So this motherfucker has to goose step everywhere because there's no goddamn knees.
How the hell would it escape from predators?
I don't know. And to make things even worse, it can never lie down because it's unable to get up.
Oh, dear.
So it has to rest on trees when it sleeps, or it will never be able to stand up again. And that is why trees randomly fall at night in the forest.
Oh, makes total sense.
Yeah.
The Nazi goose stepping moose knocked it over.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is just moose.
Would you not then find a giant moose laying on its side, helpless next to the fallen tree?
That's a really good question. I love the idea that the reason the trees fall down randomly is that there's a giant goose-stepping moose. Also, we're just burying the lead here. The thing's mouth is so freaking big that can trip over it. I mean, I've never seen a moose in person, but I've seen those videos. Those things are gigantic.
They are. I actually just drove by one here. It was on Friday. So
how tall are they?
They can range anywhere from 8 to 12 feet in height.
My God.
They are huge animals.
My God. They have like 25 years. They weigh 1,500 pounds. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they're gigantic beasts. They're not your friendly bullwinkles.
The Alaska moose only lives 16 years. Okay, I'm going down a rabbit hole here. I got a Western moose. Sorry. Give me a moment. Oh, the Western moose is the one that I'm used to, that you see. So you know what's weird? If I'm not mistaken, I think it's in Russia, they call moose caribou.
Oh, no, we got caribou up here, but they're more an offshoot of the deer species. They have
They literally call them caribou. If I'm not mistaken, it's those.
Well, as we all know, the Russians are wrong.
They are objectively, they're wrong about everything. You know what reindeer is domesticated elk, I think it is, or caribou? I forget which one it is.
I think it's elk, or is it? Now you got me second guessing.
I know reindeer weren't wild. It's caribou, yeah. So they're
okay.
They are a caribou. And then just another piece of trivia that I love that I learned when we're doing our Christmas special is Do you know why reindeer fly?
Didn't it have something to do with hallucinogens?
Yeah. So there's this population of this like native population that rides reindeers in like the tundra area, like Siberia type. And they would feed their reindeer magic mushrooms and then drink the reindeer piss. They claimed it felt like they were flying on the ride of the horses. And that's
weird one kink, but okay.
And that's where we get the idea that reindeer fly.
Wow. Okay.
That's just a fun little piece of trivia I like to throw out there at a Christmas time.
And that's why you're not allowed back at any of your family gatherings.
So just a fun resource. I did send this to you that I came across with doing this, that if you're interested in this kind of stuff, actually, no, I'm going to cut this out because I don't want people knowing where I'm getting my stuff from. Because then they might read it before I tell about it. What?
What'd you find?
I found an article from 18. Wait, Pyramid. This is like firsthand source. Like this website's sick. I'm not telling anyone about this. This is mine.
Well, you shared it with me, so maybe I can find something.
Whoa, they have firsthand accounts. Oh, it's from a book. A book like from 1872, Monster Bird in California, Seven Horned Jackalope. I can read this to you. It's actually pretty quick.
Okay.
April 21st, 1882. This is from the Waco Daily Examiner. It's Waco, Texas, you don't know who that is.
Yeah, so, you betcha. Dr. Home of the Branch Davidians.
Yes. Oh, actually, you would know where Waco. Everyone knows where Waco is.
Oh, yeah.
The cult. Yeah, I forgot about that. Dr. J.P. Tate went out hunting the other day and killed a mule-eared rabbit, which on examination, he found antlered with seven distinct well-formed horns, six across the forehead and one on the nose, after the style of a rhinoceros.
Again, it seems like that wart disease that I told you about.
Yeah. Although Dinosaur of Death Valley. Oh, no, this is too long. I can't be reading.
We've got a similar account. I can't remember what it's called. It's like the beast of something or other. I've got notes on it somewhere. But yeah, supposedly it's a photograph of a literal dinosaur running through a Canadian valley from like back in the 1960s or 1970s.
Oh, wow. Oh, I found another horned rabbit, the Gook Lucas. I had to just do it because it's what a name. So this is from the Jefferson Gimplicute from January 20th, 1911. More jackalope facts for you. The Gook Lucas, a horned rabbit, as another evidence of the greatness and productivity of Myron County, Mr. Will Gray Carrier on route number 4 brought to his office last Saturday a rabbit head to which was attached six perfectly formed horns, though one was lost in handling the head after the animal was killed. The bunny was shot by a Negro. I'm changing the word a bit. Was shot by a Negro, John Fiddler, who lives on Mr. Gray's route some 5 or 6 miles from the city and is now on exhibition at the Gimplicute office.
What Many year did that happen?
This happened in 1911.
Oh, okay.
Many conjectures have been offered as to the species of the animal, but we are inclined to think that, as Colonel G.W. Watson says, it is a genuine specimen of the long-extinct Gook Lucas, though why he should call it that, we don't know. Anyhow, the head can be seen here at any time, and it is curious indeed. This is the coolest website I've ever come across.
I'm going to have to look into that.
Wait, we got one more jackalope story, then we're done with this topic.
Okay.
This is from the Malcolm Beacon, January 26, 1912. Texas jackalope. Texas rabbits have horns. Curio, Texas. Several giant jackrabbits that have evidently been crossed with white-tailed deer have been killed in this section and brought here during the last few weeks. The rabbits have well-defined antlers, several inches long. Many jackrabbits with horns have also been killed recently.
Is it weird of me to try not to visualize the process in which they crossbred?
No, makes sense. There's a lot of these jackrabbit accounts in the 1912s and 13s. Sorry, we got to keep going. I think we got two more, then we're done with these firsthand accounts.
Okay.
I didn't intend for this to turn into a jackrabbit episode, but whatever. The Farmington Times, April 25th, 1912, Kansas jackalope, horned rabbits. Charlie Brown, Horton, Kansas, who has always been skeptical as to horned rabbits, has been shown at last. And incidentally, it remained for him to discover how there happened to be horned rabbits in Kansas. Myron T. Jones of Baker brought the head of a horned rabbit to Brown's office the other day. He had seen statements in the paper that there was no such thing and brought the head along so that he could show the editor that editors don't know everything. He shot the rabbit on an island in the Missouri River up near Rulo, Neb. I assume Neb is Nebraska.
I would say so.
So near Rulo, Nebraska. The head had five little horns, prongs or growths or some sort on it. Two on top, two at the side, and one under the jaw. Otherwise, it looked like any other rabbit. Jones accounts for this kind of rabbit by telling that years ago, a wagon circus broke down up north of Fall City that a bunch of horned rabbits brought over from Germany escaped. These have mingled with the native rabbits until the horned rabbits of today is the result. My reading ability is getting worse and worse. I'm not going to read this last one.
All right.
Anyway, I think we can start wrapping up the show. But before we do that, I know you're saying that Darcy had a little mishap while hunting for a cryptid this week.
Yeah, Darcy was initially supposed to join us. He's my co-host on Canadian Spirit. He's also the founder of Spirit itself. He's actually out in the Okanagan region. And for the American listeners to this podcast, if you don't know, Okanagan is home to a lake monster similar to the Loch Ness monster, but we call it Ogopogo. So Darcy was out on the lake with his phone, and that's his primary way of going on podcasts and whatnot, but he was out on the lake searching for Ogopogo, and he dropped his phone in the lake. So that's why he's not with us today, is because a sea monster ate his phone. We'll say that.
Well, sea monster ate Darcy's phone, aliens abducted Emily. So, I mean, hey, we're in a similar boat. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us and filling in. I really appreciate it. I would not have been able to do this alone because, as you just saw, I'm not that good at reading things out loud. Like, imagine if I was just talking to myself, it'd be a disaster. And most importantly, where can people find your podcast?
You can find our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, pretty much anywhere you find podcasts. Just type in Canadian Spirit, Spirit's all in capitals, or you can find us on Twitter at @Spirit_Canadian, or you can find us on Facebook. We've got a page on there. It's Spirit Institute GP.
Awesome. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Make sure to check out Canadian Spirit. Kelly and Darcy have a great show over there.
Thank you.
The Canadian, it's like us, but they're actually like experts on this stuff, and it's Canadian.
That's a loose term.
Hey, I mean, you've been doing this for 15 years. I've been like interested in all this stuff for 24 years, but I haven't like done any research on it until not even a full year yet. So, I mean, yeah, you're definitely in a more advanced phase. So it's like Misfits and Mysteries with more poutine.
More or less.
Yeah. So thank you again for joining us. And as always, if you enjoy our show, check out their show. And then also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and tell a friend. Telling a friend helps a lot. Word of mouth is the best marketing you can give us. Also, make sure to leave us a voicemail at 914-627-8582. You can tell us about your crazy lumberjack experience. Were you also abducted by aliens just like Emmy? Let me think, what else? Urban legends, ghost stories, UFO abductions. You saw cryptid, tell us. You can make up a story. We don't care. Just call us at 914-627-8582. Finally, before we sign off, make sure to check us out on social media. You can find us on Reddit at r/misfitsmysteries. I'm becoming more of a shit poster on topics I think that are really really fake stories, and try to make a little bit of a community there. Please send us suggestions for episodes and engage with us on Reddit. You can also find us and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @podcast_misfits. And we're also on like Facebook and Pinterest and YouTube. Just type in Misfits and Mysteries, you'll find us. So thanks for listening, guys. And as always, stay spooky.
Stay spooky.
Bye.